Bulldog.
I have a leg injury and a foot injury right
a
now.
A leg and a foot. Are they on the same
side of my body?
Side of your body?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Left.
What happened to you?
I got stung by a bee. And then I think I got stung by another bee.
Oh, come on.
I think I did.
Well, when did this happen?
Last night.
Last night?
Last night. Who knew?
It's Mike Shope.
Huh. Just never thought about getting stung by a bee at night.
I don't know.
But there would still be bees at night.
I guess.
That to sound like the flat earth thing. The bees just don't disappear when it gets dark.
Okay, but I've never seen one at night.
Well, it's dark.
And the bulldog.
Maybe they would not be out at night, but you disturbed it, so it came out and said, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, they weren't expecting me.
I'm in here trying to watch the Vietnam War on PBS,
right.
And you're what are you doing sitting down in the chair? This is my time.
You are not supposed to.
Right.
This is our time.
Right.
That's what the bee said.
Right.
So, on behalf of the other bees.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Last night I was missing Vegas. This is the weekend.
Oh,
week
right.
One, the yeah. Bare knuckle draft. They didn't do one last year, but they brought it back. They filled it last night. Saw the board. Friends are out there. You know, it's the good stuff. Didn't go this year, clearly. I'm sitting here with you. Hi, YouTube, Twitch. I'm not in Las Vegas. It's a great weekend to be there. You know, main event, big drafts, bare knuckle. Matt Schauff, our guest here on the Wester Hotline from Draft Sharks. Matt, I believe you're in the main event. You've got some action here this year. How are you?
I am, but I am also not in Vegas, and I'm a little distracted after the B lead-in discussion.
Oh,
now I'm confused.
Yeah, well, we'll try to keep you focused.
That's what we're after, confusion.
I'll try.
So the big one here, Matt, is Christian McCaffrey, and we're sort of on edge wondering what this is going to be. The fact that he's working off to the side today, as per the latest report, is not a good sign. What has been the extent of your investment or interest in McCaffrey, and if it's significant, how nervous are you?
It was modest until my main event draft, and then I took him fourth overall, and I was actually on a show with one of the FFPC guys last night talking about how, hey, McCaffrey hasn't had any calf issues all summer, so I think that's behind him. I think it's going to be a good season. I'm glad I've got him, and then lo and behold, I think I spoke it into existence.
Yeah, that's tough. Very reminiscent of last year. Well, I mean, what can you do, right?
Exactly.
What could you do last year? It was the same thing. It was right before the opener. They might have played a Monday night game last year, and you found out he wasn't going, but it wasn't – like, then he was in Germany. It wasn't clear what it was going to be.
Right.
So I think, Matt, you kind of just had to sit there with him, and, you know, it would have been tough to cut him. Maybe we're looking at that again.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to add Brian Robinson Jr. if you haven't already. He's probably been drafted – we'll be watching. We'll certainly be watching closely his status throughout the weekend and then beyond if we have to.
What did we learn last night, if anything?
I don't think we learned a whole lot last night because the numbers were a little silly. We had a couple drops late in the game that made Dak Prescott's performance look worse, but we weren't expecting big things from him. Javonte Williams controlled the Dallas backfield. That's one thing that we did learn. That's probably the biggest lesson coming out of last night, that and Jaden Blue being inactive. It sorts out a backfield that we thought would be frustrating. I still think it's going to be frustrating for the season, but for now, at least we know that Javonte Williams is the starter and Jaden Blue you're going to need to be patient with.
How did Williams look to you? I mean, it was kind of what I expected. In fact, Bulldog and I were speaking things into existence kind of. Yesterday, Bulldog mentioned he had a parlay where Williams scored two touchdowns. And I'm like, well, how did he do that? On 40 yards or something? And it was 50.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he was that impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, and both of his touchdowns actually went right in the area where Jalen Carter would have been had he not spat on Dak Prescott to kick things off. I didn't know that was part of the new ceremonies. But I'm excited to see who does the spitting tonight, at least.
Mm-hmm. Matt Schauff of Draft Sharks. So, you know, McCaffrey at the 1-4. What have been a couple of your other go-tos, you know, with drafting this year, depending on where you're picking, I guess, that has a lot to say in who we end up on. But what have been a couple of your, you know, favorite plays?
Yeah, it definitely depends on where I'm drafting. I like Puka Nacua in those early rounds versus how the market likes him. I like him a little bit higher. I like A.J. Brown, which didn't work out for me last night. He's sliding into round two. I did take him in the same draft. I think it'll be a lot better after last night's game. There are just going to be games like that for any wide receiver. And then beyond those opening rounds, DJ Moore has been a favorite of mine because he's the one guy we can trust in an offense that we have questions about heading into this season. And then a little bit deeper, Jaylen Warren is a running back I really like the upside on, especially at the price where you can get him, which is high RB3 territory. And Pittsburgh sure seems to be setting it up like he's going to be at least the first running back this year, if not the clear lead running back. We'll see about that lead status.
So you felt good about A.J. Brown, and maybe you still can. There was a little turbulence with him late last year with him and Jalen Hurts. And I didn't draft a lot of A.J. Brown, but I can buy from what I've read about last night's game that it was really a specific matchup problem, scheme problem that the Eagles had. Not even that it was a problem. Like, they moved the ball anyway. But Dallas played no snaps in man-to-man defense in the whole game. And, like, we're keying on Brown. So Philadelphia just pivoted, which is right, I suppose, to do. They got away with it. I don't know if teams are going to do that, Matt, but you sound like you're not daunted or weren't daunted by any of the, you know, noise around him.
No, I mean, A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts go back a long way. A.J. Brown's a strong personality, so stuff like that's going to happen. And if you're the Eagles, if you're Jalen Hurts, you're not avoiding A.J. Brown. He's going to end up being a key part of the pass offense. And, if every team does say, oh, we're going to take A.J. Brown away, and they actually succeed in that, then I guess everybody else in the offense is going to go nuts, because I don't think you can actually just take A.J. Brown away and stop the Eagles. So it doesn't seem like a viable game-to-game strategy for me.
How much Barkley did you end up with?
Not much, because he's going right in the first quarter of the first round. And people probably know about the curse of 370, of, you know, having 370 carries 1 year and then the next year you fall off. And it also extends into total touches for, you know, carries plus catches. And it's not about actually a curse. It's about luck, because when you touch the ball that many times as an NFL running back, you're lucky if you make it through that season without getting hurt. And you're just not likely to be that lucky year to year. So I think he's in for some bad luck, whether that is, you know, a regression in his rushing efficiency, whether he gets hurt. It just, a lot of luck went into his numbers, and he doesn't catch a whole lot of passes. So there's a bit of risk on him for me in that range. So I was taking Bijan Robinson over him, and also CeeDee Lamb at wide receiver.
Matt, obviously being in Buffalo, we're focused on Sunday night and the Ravens and the Bills. Are there plays within that game that you really like, or even just guys in general on either team that you're bullish on heading into the season?
I'm bullish on Zay Flowers, actually. I think that I'm curious to see, kind of similarly with Derrick Henry, if things regress some on his front. Now, he's different than other humans, so I'm not projecting any injury for him. Like, he's literally the one guy who is, you know, quote-unquote lucky like that, stays healthy every year with these huge workloads, but he's, you know, abnormally large. He's well-known as a workout fiend, so he just plays by different rules. But I'm curious if they're going to throw the ball a little bit more this year, and if we can get maybe more of a Zay Flowers breakout as opposed to good Zay Flowers seasons that we've had so far. On the Buffalo side, I'm very interested to see if Dalton Kincaid can really start to pay off on the first-round draft status from a couple years ago. I think he's positioned to get the targets. I want to see if he can earn targets, stay healthy, and then deliver the numbers that we need.
Yeah, don't we all, right? I mean, it's been been 2 years, and it's been pretty flat, so we'll see. That's ironically for how much they've won and how many points they score. The story with their offense of late, last year, you know, throughout, was in fantasy, or even if you're just talking like real football, like there's nobody there. There's no go-to guy, you know? So Shakir, I guess, is probably the closest. And he goes, or now that we're at the end of draft season here, was going right next to Coleman. And then, you know, Kincaid isn't too far off either. Sort of, you kind of had your pick, Matt, of the three.
Yeah, I'm also very interested to see what we get from Keon Coleman this year. I think Shakir kind of hit his ceiling last year. I don't think he's really going to get a whole lot more target share than that. And he was very efficient on a catch basis, which, you know, that's tough to keep doing year to year. And we know that Buffalo wants to spread the ball around. That's kind of their thing. I think Josh Allen makes up for some of the offensive planning on that team. I still don't trust Joe Brady. I think he leans too heavily on Josh Allen, and that is rewarded by just how good Josh Allen is at, you know, winning the games on his own. So, yeah, I agree with what you said, Mike. There aren't really go-to fantasy guys there. you know, even Josh Allen's a little bit scary at the very top of quarterback territory.
Were you Allen over Jackson or Daniels? How were you playing the quarterbacks?
I was actually waiting beyond that duo at the top, looking at Jaden Daniels from the end of round three on, and then Jalen Hurts in round four has been my favorite of those top four because he's been going clearly behind the top three. You could get him middle of round four on. I took him at 409 in the draft we referenced before, so I think all four of those guys are very close together, so if I can get one of those well behind the others, then that's going to be my target.
Love it. One of my main teams, we got Daniels at 410. So that feels good. Even without McLaurin, I think you can definitely do that. How about James Cook, Matt? So like Kincaid, you know, like the other Bills, not somebody that was so costly that if you didn't get, I mean, not 16 touchdowns, but even 10, you know, if you've got a sort of a more normal number, you might not really get burned because he's not a first-round pick or anything like that. Did you like Cook at his value?
I didn't really. I wonder if I overplayed my dislike for him. So, you know, as you were just kind of alluding to, the touchdowns really pumped him up last year. His usage was down at the bottom of RB2 territory, even just outside of it, in terms of, you know, how many carries he got, how many catches he got, where he was getting those touches on the field. So got lucky on the touchdown front. If he gets less lucky there this year, that's going to fall. I think he's being drafted at a fair range. It's not quite late enough for him to be a target for me because we've still got Kenneth Walker behind him. We've got Kyren Williams near him. So I prefer those guys. And even just beyond that, we've got like Alvin Kamara, James Conner. So he hasn't stood out, but I guess I'm less negative on James Cook right now than I was a couple months ago.
Turning attention to tonight, recognizing that we're at the end pretty much of best shape of his life season, are you buying Travis Kelce being in said shape?
I am, because he spoke about needing to get back in shape after last season. So I buy that he had that focus. And he's still in a position where he should get pretty good target volume, especially with Rashee Rice out.
How about the Chiefs in general, Matt? Xavier Worthy's a pretty hot pick. Rice suspended, as you alluded to there. Hollywood Brown even. And then Mahomes within this. I ended up drafting quite a bit of Mahomes, you know, sixth round, seventh round even, because, you know, he's there and you might have Worthy already, and it's kind of pretty easy. Falls into your lap a little bit. What kind of year do you expect?
I think that there's a nice range of outcomes on Mahomes. By his standards, he's been a little disappointing the past couple of years, but there still is that potential, obviously, in him as a player to have the kind of season that Joe Burrow had last season, where, you know, he doesn't run like the elite quarterbacks, but still finish number two in fantasy points. You know, it's tougher to do that when you're leaning so heavily on the passing, and Mahomes needs better help from his receivers. Losing Rice for six games obviously doesn't help, but they've been trying to build up the receivers around him, especially on the speed front, Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown. So if they can keep those guys healthy and hit more of the downfield stuff, it really could be a bounce back year for Mahomes. And like you were saying, the way that he was going in drafts, it was like, yeah, I'll go ahead and take Patrick Mahomes here and we'll see what happens.
So one of the fun aspects of those Vegas drafts is the tournament goes through Saturday, through tomorrow. And whatever happens in these two games, last night and tonight, you could move guys in or out of your lineup accordingly. So A.J. Brown, you're not going to start A.J. Brown now that you know he had like 2 points or whatever it is.
Yeah.
The Chargers, one of these big teams, I've got McConkey, sure, like you'd like to expect him to count in your lineup, but also Quentin Johnston and Keandre Lambert-Smith. I don't know how he didn't have room for Trey Harris on this team, Matt, but three Chargers receivers, and if it's a big night for them, one of the other two guys, maybe a big touchdown or even two, something like that happens, then you can put them in. So they call it a free look. What do you think of the Chargers layout here? There's Keenan Allen now, too, and that's kind of maybe a little bit of a wet blanket on this idea.
Yeah, I'm very curious, and maybe even the bigger wet blanket is the run history of Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman. I'm very curious to see if they keep throwing the ball more like they did late last season, or if they threw the ball more late last season because they had to, because the running backs were hurt, and because they realized they had Justin Herbert, they needed to lean that way. They signed Najee Harris. They drafted Omarion Hampton. So I'm expecting a whole lot more running. So I'm not projecting big passing stuff, but they have the talent to do it if they want to. Trey Harris, I know that he had a very quiet and reportedly disappointing summer. I still think the talent's there where he could break out at some point. He interests me as like a very late draft pick to see if he can develop over the course of the season and then give us some value later in the year.
What kind of workload do you think the backfield will be there? There was some confusion this week, like some reporting based on something Harbaugh never said about Najee Harris starting the game. You've got the highly drafted rookie in Hampton. Like, what do you think the split will look like back there?
Yeah, no matter what you see on Twitter or X or whatever you call it, Amarian Hampton's the starter this week. None of us really knows how much Najee Harris is going to get the ball, but when you don't practice at all through the summer, I can't imagine the team's about to give you the ball a lot in the opener, even if you are a veteran and know how to play. So we're all watching to see it. It feels like the Chargers coaches have been setting us up to not expect a workhorse load for Hampton, and I guess it would make sense for them to not overwork him right away. But if I drafted him, probably, round three, maybe you got him in round four, I'm probably going to go ahead and start Hampton and then see what happens in this one.
I mean, Matt, Draft Sharks is so good and sharp at trying to – you do the best you can with all the coach speak stuff and trying to figure out what's really happening. Now this with McCaffrey and with Najee Harris, I mean, he has that fireworks accident. And when camp opens a week or two later, I think they played in the Hall of Fame game, so they might have been first to camp. But Jim Harbaugh is saying we're praying for healing. And so that he doesn't practice at all and he's got an eye patch or he's got a visor or something. He really just never talks. You really have no idea what is happening except that he's not playing football. And then we get to this week and they're off to Brazil and, he's going to be active tonight. So I don't know either. Maybe he's a goal line back tonight. But that's like high leverage stuff, and why would they do that? I mean, Hampton's a first round pick. They got to see what they've got, and they're going to take him off the field for any significant amount of time to put Najee Harris, like, who's so cold at this point. I don't know. Very weird. He could have just told you what was really happening at any point there, but chose not to.
I think coaches are moving further away from just telling us what's happening. It's refreshing when we get a coach who does, but it seems like they all want to play games with us at this point.
Yeah. I already billed you by, announcing you were coming on today. You're my IDP guy. For anybody out there playing fantasy football and with defensive players, what's maybe one rule of thumb or some like hot take of yours? It doesn't even have to be hot, Matt. Just something in the defensive realm you might want to share.
Well, one rule of thumb, it is important to know your league-specific rules, because every time I talk about sleepers or moves to make, I get these questions like, should I drop Roquan Smith for that sleeper that you just mentioned? No, you shouldn't. If you only start two linebackers, you should keep Roquan Smith and some other big-name guy and just set him in your lineup every week and not even pay attention to it. But for those who do have deeper defensive lineups, I have actually the sleeper article that picked out one sleeper from every single team this year, so loads of guys for various levels. Carson Schlesinger is somebody who should be in play for leagues of all sizes. Rookie linebacker in Cleveland. They drafted him to fill a need because Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah has a neck injury. And then after they drafted Schlesinger, they had another linebacker retire. So now they need him even more. He was wildly productive last year at UCLA. They picked him at the top of round two when everybody was waiting for that to be Shedeur Sanders. So I would say Carson Schlesinger is one name on defense to know if you play IDPs.
And then they guaranteed his money. And they're also probably bad, which is good for this, right? More stats if they're bad.
Yep.
Who's your Bills sleeper, by the way?
Oh, my Bills sleeper. Now you're really putting me on the spot.
Sorry.
I don't know if I have a true sleeper, to be honest. The guys that I'm interested in are Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid, because at cost, I think they have the potential to be underrated. But it doesn't look like a team to me where somebody's going to sneak up out of nowhere and deliver us big numbers, whether on offense or defense.
Okay. You have a thought on Bosa before you go?
Yeah, I didn't like that signing. I mean, I guess I like taking a chance on him, but he looked pretty cooked over the past few years for the Chargers, and I don't think there's a whole lot to draw from that well.
Thank you, Matt. What's new at Draft Sharks for our listeners?
Well, all of our tools have been built out to their highest level yet. Even though people are past their drafts now, you got Team Intel, you got the Free Agent Finder. So I use these tools to manage all my teams throughout the season. It really makes it a lot easier. They've gained power versus last year. And I even though I'm biased, I can't recommend them highly enough.
The aesthetics are good, too. It looks good. So
absolutely.
Thank you, Matt.
Hey, thank you guys for having me.
Of course. Matt Schauff of Draft Sharks out of Rochester here on WGR. Tyler Bass put on IR. We'll talk to Sal at 5. The easy assumption is that veteran Matt Prater, who was signed to the practice squad yesterday, will kick for the Bills Sunday night, and unless it doesn't go well for the next
at least four games. At least 4 weeks, right?
You know, that's the soonest Bass could come back is week 5 against New England. So kind of a blow there. How much of one? 803-0550 if you want to join us on that or any other Bills-Ravens-related topic. It is time for us to take a break. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog will be back in a snap. It's brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
You see the ability. They flash in their own ways. They're two different players or style of player, but they're both talented. And I think, again, with any young player, you're seeing the flashes on the field. You're watching them grow off the field and how they're becoming pros off the field. And they're going to play quite a bit Sunday night there. And, again, they'll get some valuable reps and experience that I'm sure they'll carry with them through the rest of the season.
Sean McDermott on WGR. We're talking TJ Sanders, Landon Jackson.
No, here. Deion Walker.
Deion Walker.
The two tackles, yeah.
Landon Jackson
probably isn't even getting a uniform.
Okay. He's on my mind because Matt Schauff just texted me, our last guest, to say that his long-term IDP sleeper for the Bills is Landon
Jackson. Wow, okay. That is a long-term. Wow! No, that is a long-term play. Sorry, a little throwback to an hour ago.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting a uniform, which is, I mean, third round pick in a team with a Super Bowl, you know, in a Super Bowl window. I mean, I appreciate a long play, and I love the pick, but I, as soon as the numbers started shaking out, it right away looked like, oh boy, this guy's going to be in tough. And then camp started, and he's like never in the front end of the rotation or anything, and like he's got a long way to go.
Football Friday on WGR brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. Call the 8s. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, Crosby's hometown fuel, game day ready since 1922. No Tyler Bass for at least 4 games. Matt Prater, who has been in the league a long time, signed to the practice squad, the likely kicker for the Bills this game and going forward. We'll see what the prognosis is on Bass, but it might be one where we don't know anything more than we already do until Sunday night or early next week. Why put a timetable on it, right? So 4 games at least for Bass.
Right, we know at least that timetable is concrete now. He cannot come back until 4 games have gone by. So, you know, if he's ready in 2 weeks, too bad. There's nothing they can do about it. And so, you know, your concern, like Tyler Bass, we had a lot last year a lot of these Football Fridays. I'm worried about Tyler Bass. I'm worried about Tyler Bass. You know, not just our show, but it was a regular thing. And now, you know, that would have been probably still a thing. I think we heard it a time or two during the summer before we knew he was even hurt. Just, you know, I'm worried about the kicker because he missed some kicks one time, you know, whatever. And now we go from, you know, being worried about Tyler Bass to a 41-year-old journeyman kicker instead. So we'll try that out and see how it works. I mean, guys show up and make kicks, you know, all the time in this league. So hopefully in a game, you know, to start here, at least in week 1, that you would expect to be a relatively close game, maybe down to the end, you know, you better hope the veteran can handle it.
Prater's career goes back to 2007. Ryan Lindell would have been the Bills kicker when Prater, does that make you feel old or make Prater seem old? I don't know. But at 41, according to Sneaky Joe, he becomes the oldest Bills player ever. By almost 3 years.
Right. Bill Munson.
Bill Munson. Good job. Bill Munson. There were 2 Bill Munsons, by the way. There was also like the, was he a scout or head of scouting
executive
for the Bills?
Or something, yeah.
But he, for a long time, I would see him a lot. And for a long time, I thought he was, like, why would you not think this? There's a Bill Munson in the Bills front office. There was a quarterback named Bill Munson for the Bills, but they're different people. The football player Bill Munson died the year 2000, maybe. But he, until Sunday, apparently, when it's Matt Prater for this distinction, is the oldest Bills player ever. He was a backup quarterback for the Bills in a game against New England in 1979. Joe Ferguson started that game, and he also – Ferguson played the next week. So Munson didn't get a start, but he did throw seven passes in this home game against the Patriots in 79. Joe sent me a list of like the top 30 appearances by oldest Bills. Mm-hmm. Like, so Munson is on here three times. Doug Flutie is on here 10 times and or 11, and the rest is Brian Moorman. So the three players who have appeared age 37 and 38 in Bills history are Moorman, Flutie, and Munson. And now here comes Matt Prater strutting in at 41. At least, you know, journeyman, it's almost like by definition journeyman once you're 41. But he has held down jobs with teams for long stretches. Like, he wasn't a guy, you don't really have this maybe as often as you used to. But he wasn't always bouncing around.
Right.
Atlanta to Denver, he was in Denver for maybe 7 years, and then Detroit for another seven, and then Arizona for four, and he was their regular kicker until he got hurt last year in week five, meniscus tear, and was out for the season.
So that's the last time he would have kicked against the Bills on opening day last year.
Yeah, I think so.
Journeyman might be a little, I mean, it's a lot, it's enough teams to qualify as a journeyman, but it's not the length of tenure. I feel like I may have been a little too pejorative using journeyman on him.
Two on field goals against the Bills in the opener. On extra points the next week. Sorry.
All right. I also need to adjust to 2007 actually being a long time ago.
Yeah.
Because anything that doesn't begin with 19-something still does not feel like it should be that long ago. But, you know, it's 18 years ago now. So it's a long enough time. It can vote.
Prater did not miss a kick last season.
All right.
Six for six field goals, 10 for 10 extra points.
Great. He's due to have a bad day.
And he would have had that much experience with the new kickoff stuff. I don't know if he was somebody that, you know, just kick it as far as you can, or if they wanted to hit the landing zone or anything like that. But we have that, of course, still, and it's enhanced this year. It's more dynamic than ever.
Was there a single touchback in last night? I did not watch the end of this game, although there wouldn't have been another kickoff because there weren't any points scored.
That's right.
After the delay,
I didn't keep track of that.
I don't feel like I saw a touchback last night.
I know there was one. I think it was Turpin for Dallas mishandled it.
Yeah, and he got hemmed in, and yeah.
So there was one of those.
Yeah.
Just everybody, get your seatbelts on for the space ref stuff. There's going to be more of it. You'll have more times than ever, and won't this be delightful, where you'll be watching a game, you know, seriously, and you really won't know what just happened. So last night there was one that burned me. A Jalen Hurts tush-push play on 3rd and 1. And naked eye, I thought he got stopped, but it would be one in every year of football you've ever watched where they'd measure it. Unpack the pile, measure it, and let's find out. Now, they won't measure anymore. They gutted that. There's no more measurements.
Right. They're using a Hawkeye for that. They're still allowing the old men that roam the sidelines in the striped shirts to place the ball, decide where it is, but the measurement is going to be computer or whatever. Yeah.
I thought by this last night, they might want to limit that, because that was no less time-consuming in the preseason. You know, they were sort of experimenting with that in the preseason, but you still sat there and waited. And it wasn't like tennis where it's automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Now tennis, it really is like immediate. There's no linesman anymore in tennis. The computer just calls the lines.
Yep.
And it's binding. They'll maybe show you a replay as the players are getting ready for the next point, but there's literally no delay. And in the preseason with the NFL, first year of this, there was some delay. Hurts on this play, pretty critical play, 3rd and 1, tush-push, maybe was stopped short. I thought he was. And here comes, like a bolt of lightning, the official from the bottom of the screen, if that's the line judge or the side judge, I don't know. Like a bolt of lightning, and he's running up to the pile, and he's gesturing, you see this all the time now, with his right arm and hand. Let's go. Basically, it's a first down.
He's got it.
He doesn't signal first down. The referee signals first down, but the referee is getting from him that we're giving him the first down, and he's getting it from the sky ref.
Mm-hmm.
You can see his left hand is adjusting the earpiece at his belt, turning on or off the earpiece. He's the guy, Maybe they're all this. I don't know. But he's the guy getting the information from the Skyref, and there is no way. There's just no way.
So they're using Skyref to assist in the spotting of the ball, even?
Absolutely.
Is that what that sounds like? That's
absolutely
what that sounds like. Okay.
That's exactly what happened. Maybe that's on the list of these. This can happen, or maybe it isn't.
I feel like I haven't read that because I've been hot about the whole, like, they're making a big deal about this measurement thing, but it's still the naked eye of the official. If there is, I think I want that to be the case. Like, if you have a good look at it that the guy, you know, on the field didn't have, that's, I think, what we want.
But the only look at it, well, I guess I can't know this. I just don't think it would have been possible in the amount of time.
Yeah.
For somebody in New York to be able to judge that, you know, confidently. Like, what, there is a chip in the ball or there isn't?
Right.
I mean, really, maybe I should know that. Because how could it have been possible to call that so fast from anywhere? So here comes the guy running in, and he's running. Now, they've just had a weather delay. And I would think sort of that, you know, this is how I am. Like, well, we're going to really want to move this along. We just wasted an hour of prime time on opening night. And, you know, first down, come on.
Right.
And by the way, it would have been fourth and inches at worst, and he's going to run the same play, and the odds are pretty good. But yeah. You don't want football called like that.
No.
We don't want to assume. But that's what happened. You know, I tweeted this. Somebody sent me a video of it today, and I tweeted it because I think it was egregious. Like, just, let's go.
Right.
Like they had a deadline. They called that play like they had a deadline.
You've really piqued my curiosity with this. I also got that video, but I wasn't watching the game, and I just didn't take the time to figure out exactly what had happened there. But
you could look right now if you want.
It's the first I've heard of. I had not known. It's possible that I just didn't know because I didn't read deep enough into the story about rules changes and different things that Skyref was going to be capable of consulting on or flat out ruling on. I did not know that they would be helping spot the ball.
I have it. I've got the, like, section 9. I'm not sure it's exactly specified here that they can do that. Timing or spot of a foul. Well, there's just no, this is why I'm this way about the Skyref, because there's no question what was happening. The guy is adjusting his belt on the left to turn on or off the earpiece, and on the right, you know, he's waving the chains behind his head, you know, come on, let's go. And then the referee, Sean Smith, notices this. He's on the other side of the pile, by the way, Smith, and gives the first down signal while Trayvon Diggs for Dallas is pointing the other way. Like, they thought they'd stopped him.
Even though it wasn't fourth down. I love when guys do that.
I thought so, too. I thought he was stopped, too. But they can do anything they want with the Skyref, and they will. And the first time, by the way, I mean, now I'm going full conspiracy, I guess. But the first time they showed the replay, they cut it short. They did not.
Wow.
They did not stay with the replay and NBC it and zoom in on the line. They did. They just showed the play from behind, and they didn't even give you a look at it at all. And then it was on to the next play. No analysis of it, which is typical. You know, they're not going to spend most of these announcers know not to, you know, scrutinize the Skyref stuff.
No,
so they just moved on. You know, and as a fan, as a viewer, you're nowhere. It looked like it was wrong. I don't know if it could have been challenged, but that doesn't even feel great. We use a timeout on that when it's fourth and inches against Jalen Hurts at best. Like, I'm not even sure the Cowboys had time to ponder any of these things. Just like, let's go. I went as far last night, a couple of drinks, to tweet how that weather delay, the Super Bowl odds on all the indoor teams are getting shorter by the minute tonight. Because what a disaster for the league. And it's not the first one of these where there it is, like, here's your night. And instead we got an hour of, you know, Dungy talking and you know, Maria Taylor talking to Chris Sims. Like, they couldn't even go to commercial. You're just sort of sitting, like, their commercials are slotted by different points in the game.
Right.
And there's no game right now. It's just a rain delay. So, like, that's a nightmare for the network. You know, not to be too cynical, but if we play if the Super Bowl winner is in a dome, we will not have this problem next year. We'll have our night, and it won't be interrupted by dumb lightning. Well, never mind that.
You are pretty never far that. In the hole there.
I don't think the odds really changed, actually.
I'm pretty far in.
Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here with Sal Capaccio at 5. This is WGR.